Hello, More Than Mormon podcast listeners. Today's episode contains conversation about suicide and may not be suitable for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Well, it's lovely. You have very pornographic shoulders.
I do. They are so pornographic today. And I got myself a little push-up bra. You know, it's just looking pretty good. Luckily, it is a full romper, so... Despite the fact that I have my porn shoulders and my sexy cleavage here, I am covered from, you know, everything down to my ankles, with exception for some rib cutouts. So I am...
Well, that won't stop me from
borderline walking pornography. Yes. Yes.
It's more than a podcast. They're more than best friends. It's more than an hour of laughing and crying and then going back to laughing again. More than a podcast, they're more than ex-Mormon. It's the More Than Mormon podcast.
Everyone, welcome back to More Than Mormon. My name is Lena.
And I'm Meg.
And we are pumped as fuck because we have our first legit guest. Everybody, welcome Jen from the Exmo Candle Co.
Hello.
We are so happy to have you. How are you?
Great. How are you guys?
We're living the dream.
We're
glad
here.
You're here.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
We're here.
We made it. I feel like every time we record, it's like a battle to get. It's kind of like Satan is trying to keep us from doing the Lord's work.
Absolutely. He is cutting in. But every time. You know, we just sprout right up like a little flower from cement. Suck it, Satan.
Which, Lena, I know you don't watch VeggieTales. First question for Jen, I guess, is did you ever watch VeggieTales? How do you feel about it?
So I didn't watch it growing up, but oddly, through babysitting, there was like one episode that I saw over and over and over again. There was an episode with Madame Blueberry, who was...
Phenomenal episode.
She's like,
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh my god. Yeah. Yes. And it's like the only episode I've ever seen, but I've seen it like five times. Oh, so
over and over. Yikes. Mm-hmm. Bless your heart. And I mean that sincerely.
Thank you.
There's a for some reason this just popped into my brain, but there's an episode of Veggie Tales where like a weed grows through cement, but it's like Satan's weed. Like it's like
be.
I think it has something to do with, like, if you tell a lie, it's like a weed, like it just keeps going, it gets out of control. So in a way, we are the weed and God is the cement.
And you're breaking him,
and we're really pushing his buttons for sure.
We are breaking the chains, baby. Oh my god, Meg.
Yes.
Okay, this is such a sidetrack. Do you remember when I was at BYU Idaho and there was some chick in some ward who was like attacking me on Facebook for wanting Dr. Pepper, and she was all upset that I was drinking caffeine, and you like butt in and she told you that you needed to help me break the chains of caffeine addiction. Do you remember that?
Oh, on Facebook this happened. Yes.
Long time ago. Yeah.
Yes. Break those chains. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Saying that just like brought back one of those memories.
Same vibe. We're like breaking the chains of our time in the Mormon church.
Yes.
Like breaking yes. free.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Jen, give us a little synopsis, if you will, of your Mormon background.
Yeah, sure. So I was not born in the covenant, which made me feel really cool as a kid. I felt really different. And like I had this knowledge, you know, being an outsider, because when I was like five, a member of my family let me have a sip of beer, like before my family converted, so I felt like really cool. And then of course when I started dating, it became a big deal because guys and their families were like, oh, I don't know, you know, she's not from like Mormon stock, she might not stay faithful. Like, you're right. But my family converted when I was six. And I remember we went to go look at a few different churches. And I remember my parents asking me which church I wanted to go to. And the stake center that we went to had this really weird colored brick. And at the time, I wanted to be an archaeologist, but I was also six, so I didn't understand that bricks are, like, made of mud and they're nothing special. But I thought it was made out of a really rare stone because it was this bizarre color. So I said that church just because I wanted to go back. And I remember, like, our first Sunday back, I brought a hammer and I was, like, chipping off pieces of the stake center so to, like, analyze adorable. Scientifically. So
I just, like, fuck theology because of tiny little Jen with, like, this little hard hat.
Yeah.
And, like, this little hammer. And this, like, little bucket to, like, collect your findings. Oh, my hell.
Right, and it's, like, fuck geology because it contributed to my family joining Mormonism because I was like all gung-ho about going to the Mormon church. But
right, I was gonna say, like, the whims of a six-year-old really, like, fucked with a whole family. Like, that's insane. This is why you shouldn't trust children to make important decisions. This is why you're not accountable till you're eight, because when you're six, you're fucking shit up and you're just like, I don't know that one, it's probably,
you have 2 years of serious learning before you're actually, like, ready to make the dive, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So how did your parents, like, did they grow up religious? Like, what made them decide to, like, bring church into the factor?
You know, growing up in the church, there was always sort of a mythology about it. So my dad had converted when he was younger and then he'd gone inactive. And when I was a little kid, we always had home teachers come into the house, and my dad would be, like, smoking a cigarette and being like, what do you want, you know? And then the sort of family mythology is that when we moved houses, my mom found the Book of Mormon and read it and was like, I think the church is true. And, you know, and then also at the same time, my dad was like, oh, well, if we went to any church, it would have to be the Mormon church because deep down I know it's true. In retrospect, I don't know if that's, like, a faith-promoting version of what was going on with them, or if that's, you know, really the whole story. But yeah, so we started going to church when I was six. And then I, for a long time as a kid, like, I didn't think the church was true. And, you know, I was just sort of like, this is really weird. This is, you know, a lot of rules and a lot of sitting down in stockings and things in Sunday school. But I was also bullied a lot at school, and I was making some friends at church, so that was good. And I remember getting baptized, they still didn't really, like, believe in the truth claims of the church. Not that I thought of them as truth claims at eight, but by that point, I was starting to be a little bit indoctrinated because I was already having thoughts that, oh, well, you know, maybe if I died before I got baptized, like, just in case, you know, like, just in case. And I was starting to feel that pressure of, like, sinning and things. But at some point between getting baptized and entering the Young Women's Program, like, I think around that time of, like, hitting puberty or whatever, I was all in on it. You know, like, I knew with every fiber of my being that it was true, and it was, you know, I was all about it.
There's something about being that age that just makes you want to be, like, so firm and, like, you know, whatever it is that you're, like, into or whatever it is that you believe at the time, like, you are just, like, your true little teenage self. Like, I can relate to non-religious things at that age for sure. But when you think about the indoctrination standpoint, like, you're getting a little bit older. There's, like, this nagging in the back of your head of, like, well, I better start thinking about how I'm going to be as a wife and a mom. And in order, I don't know, I'm just, like, this is my observation, but I feel like, you know, that kind of contributes to deciding at that age whether you're going to be all in or not. I don't know. What do you think?
No, that totally resonates. And actually, if we won the lottery, like, we don't play the lottery, but if we won it, I'd love to go back to school and take psychology classes and child psychology classes and just to really try to fully understand why it is. Because I agree. I think there's something about being that age that makes you particularly susceptible to this stuff. But yeah, what you said totally makes sense to me in terms of my own experience.
So you're a, oh, sorry, Meg, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so then at what point did you start to, like, question the church? Like, you know, what was like the turning point for you in terms of your exit from the church?
Yeah, so I'd had a lot of really painful experiences in the church as a teenager. One being like a bishop's interview when I was 15, because you go in having no idea what to expect when you go to repent of something. And then like that just ended up being extremely traumatic and like really shocking for me at that age.
Of course, yeah.
And it
huh, I wonder why.
Yeah, I mean it was really like they don't prepare you. They tell you how beautiful the repentance process is, how loving bishops are. And of course they do all of this really graphic sexual probing, like with this really benevolent face and this really, you know, general conference type voice. And so you feel like, you know, oh, this is love, you know, this is,
oh my this is God, love. This yes. is
love, you know, and so there was a lot of pain in my teenage years with struggling with sexuality. And of course, you know, they teach that even your thoughts can condemn you. So every time I have a sexual thought, I end up feeling like I'm possessed by Satan. And none of that made me closer to the church though. And then, but I think it sort of primed me to start to be able to doubt later because there was just so much pain like during that time of my life. But I know the first like huge doubt was when I was 18 in my high school seminary class. My seminary teacher assumed that we all knew troubling stuff about church history. Which we didn't because it was
rookie mistake. Yeah, I mean
that was
that was 2002. Yeah, rookie. You know, like the internet wasn't a huge part of people's lives. Like,
no,
the cool kids at school still had beepers. Like, very few people had cell phones. People weren't going on the internet for everything. Even if they were, there wasn't this stuff on the internet.
No.
Well, and the church hadn't released like all the essays and that kind of stuff too. So even the church wasn't like open about those kinds of things.
Totally.
Right. And then every time I heard something about like dismissed polygamy, it was so easy to dismiss it as an anti-Mormon lie or whatever. But my seminary teacher, who was really devout and really educated about the church and everything else, started to, he assumed that we knew and had been told this by people at school or something, but I had never heard of the priesthood ban with Black members of the church. And
oh, dang, I mean, what a crazy thing to start with.
Yeah, well, and he gives us this lesson, like, defending it, but I never even knew that it had been a thing. And so I'm sitting there, like, just sweating, you know, and like, having a total physical response of shock. And I mean, it was the first time since being converted to the church in my heart, really, that I was like, this might not be true. Like, that, you know, like, this is internally inconsistent with the things that I thought I knew about the gospel and about God. And at that point, I didn't even know that they were banned from the celestial kingdom, you know, unless they were servants or, you know, other things like that. It was just that priesthood angle. So that, you know, came into my head. I sort of asked around about it, and adults in my ward told me that I would get answers about that in the endowment, which really pisses me off in retrospect.
What endowment ceremony were they going to?
Yeah, I got that answer a lot, like when I had questions about things. Fuck? Like, oh, the answer to that is too sacred. You will understand when you get endowed. And I guess maybe they were thinking that I would get some new spiritual lens to be able to understand these deep doctrines. But
I do think there's this idea that like once you're endowed, then you can take like whatever doubt or concern you have, like, you know, not just to prayer, not just to your bishop, but like to the temple, like to the house of the Lord. And that because you're in that environment that your doubts like won't be as, I don't know, like pertinent.
Right.
But things like, you know, people being denied priesthood because of the color of their skin, like those are things, like doesn't matter what building you're in, like that's gonna bother you,
right,
you know, no matter where you are. So that is really frustrating, because I could see, especially adults talking to, what were you, you said you're like 18.
I was 18 at the time, yeah.
So that kind of like, oh, she's just too young, like she hasn't had mm-hmm. access to that level of spirituality in a way. But you as an 18-year-old, like certainly like even really young children. This must
have been like the pre-shelf. Right. Yes. You know, like before the shelf.
It's just a nail in the wall. About. Just like. Right. Just one little thing.
Just, well, yeah. And I'm so literal. Know. So when they told me that, I'm okay. The endowment is specifically going to address this. Like mysteries are going to be revealed. And all of these questions that I've had, because it was about so many things besides that. It was about polygamy and all of these things. And polygamy never made me question my faith, but it did really piss me off at God sometimes. It was like, fuck you. Like, this is so not okay. Anyways.
1,000%.
Well, and it also, like, sorry, this is a tangent. But
welcome to More Than Mormon.
It really made me suspicious of Mormon men, because I was always so worried about polygamy getting reinstated. Like, you know, because mm-hmm. we always talked about how it only went away because of U.S. laws and the U.S. government. And I'm like, well, if this gets legalized again, like, is this boy I have a crush on in the ward going to, like, you know, practice polygamy? And, you know, oh.
What a crazy thought for, like, someone who is, like, a teenager to have to, like, be worried about the potential that a boy they have a crush on could someday, like, be practicing polygamy. Right. And that you would have to be like, am I okay with this boy I have a crush on, like, having other wives? Like, what a, like, huge topic for, like, a teenage brain to have to deal with. Like,
and outside of the Mormon lens, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But when insane. You're Mormon, like, absolutely. You know, and I had conversations with people all the time, particularly women, like, if your husband, like, you know, the general conference talk came and they reinstated polygamy and your husband came to you and was like, you know, I need to marry your sister or your best friend, or, you know, heaven forbid, someone who was underage, like, would you be okay with that? And surprisingly, they're like, oh, yeah, like, you know, if the prophet says, like, clearly there's a reason and I trust my husband to, like, take care of me. And, you know, no one says that he has to have sex with them. And it is.
How is that, like, any better? Most... Because is she allowed to have sex with anyone else? Like, sorry.
No, no, but, like, you're really, fine. How I feel like we can make
this whole
better?
Episode a rant on polygamy.
This is exactly how
every episode could be a rant on polygamy. Like, somehow, like, we could get there.
Yes. And especially as a woman, when you, so did you ever get endowed?
I didn't. So
you didn't. Okay. No. So you were,
and actually
out, at least not in enough to be endowed.
Yeah. Well, I really wanted to be endowed, but, and here's where I don't know how much of my story to share because there's other people involved. I lost my virginity when I was 18, like right before I went to SVU. And so I was going through, like, the repentance process at SVU, and my bishop was, like, really horrible to me about it. And it ended up being something where I just sort of I still believed in the church and I was still going to church, but I sort of withdrew from that repentance process and was just like, okay, I'm not worthy of getting endowed. I'll worry about it when, like, if I meet someone to get married to, but, like, I'm not going to. It was a really dark place for me, like, being in an all Mormon environment for the first time in my life and having this really judgmental, really impatient, sort of cruel bishop. And then, like, it was just something I had to withdraw from. So no, I really wish I had been endowed to, like, have the full experience. And, like, one of the things I'd love to do is get my hands on some garments now and, like, wear them for a week and see what that's like.
Oh, my God.
Girl, we can hook you up. I can make that happen.
Yes, we can. We can make that happen. I'm not even kidding. There's so many people out there who, even if they're not, like, completely out, their temple recommends are still active. And all you have to do is go online. And actually, people who had been endowed and don't even have an active temple recommend, it used to be, I don't know if it still is, you used to be able to go online and purchase regardless, because your account would coincide with like your membership records, and it would see that you've been endowed, and you could order garments that way. So girl, we will hook you up.
Oh yes. Yeah, we'll find somebody for sure. We know a lot of Mormons. A lot of Mormons, a lot of progressive Mormons, a lot of like not technically ex-Mormons, but like basically ex-Mormons.
All right. Well, Adrian will kill you because I'm sure that he does not want me to wear garments for a week following all the rules. But I will
like, can I like go out of town when you do that? Like, I don't want to see that. Like, garments ruin it. Boy, do they ever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him.
I had a moment on, I think it was like right after I got back from my mission. So I was like kind of dating. And
like after that sad story, I'm going to pour some wine.
Oh yeah. In fact, let me crack open my cider.
So I have a seltzer, a hard seltzer.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, sorry, Megan. I didn't mean to. My ADHD is bad today, you guys. I should have had a little bit more of my medication, but I chose not to because I'm trying to.
All good.
I wanted to have a little bit of alcohol. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. So I got back home from my mission and I was not a perfect missionary, but I really wanted to be a good missionary. And I really didn't think about dating or guys for most of my mission. Like there was a few guys that I emailed, but even then it wasn't all consuming. Like not to blame anyone, but like some sister missionaries I served with were very like boy crazy, just the whole mission. But I really tried to distance myself from that. So then coming home and starting to like date again, I remember like after getting home from a date, like getting like taking a shower and then getting out of the shower and putting on like my garments and looking in the mirror and just being like, this is what I'm going to look like on my like wedding night. Like, this is what I'm going to look like the first time that I like sleep with this guy that I like love. Like, and I was just like, this is awful. Like, it's horrible. And it's just, and it's not because it's anything crazy, but it's just not flattering. And I think even if you do grow up Mormon, when you think of like sexy, like wedding night times, you just think of something that is a little more exposing and a little more like flattering to your curves, and garments are just like not.
But also just, like,
there's no way to be cute in garments.
There's like so much of your personality that goes into expressing your sexuality, and those just override it. You know, I mean, again, I haven't worn garments, but I mean, I'm familiar with them. Like,
you're not wrong. And you're totally right. Like, sexuality, you know, it's a part of everyone's nature and we all express it differently. And last year I did a boudoir photo shoot and it was legit the best $800 I spent in my entire life. I think everyone should do it at least once.
$800.
Well, it was funny story, side note, it was like a Groupon that I found and I was just gonna do it on a whim and like maybe purchase a couple pictures. They give you like two free digitals or whatever, and I was like, maybe I'll just do this like just for fun. I'm starting to like come out of my shell a little bit, surprise Isaac. And then I started to spend some money on some lingerie and stuff that I wanted to like use for the shoot, couldn't keep secret. And then I came back from the photo shoot, saw my pictures, looked at the prices, and I was like, I want all but like seven of them. So I just purchased everything and I got, you know, like prints and like I spoiled myself. But when I went for this photo shoot, I was so nervous. I was like, my first outfit was just like a black bra, black panties, and one of my husband's like work shirts, right? And I just remember thinking like, oh my gosh, like this is just really like sexual and inappropriate. And it's just like so out of my comfort zone. And then I saw myself in a completely different light when I had gotten the photos back. And now I have like a lot of lingerie, different colors, different styles. And that translated into me being brave to wear a bikini, brave to wear a one piece that was like super low cut, brave to wear crop tops, you know, and like that ability to express myself sexually in my own way privately helped me translate my ability to express myself sexually publicly, if that makes any sense. And it just like, it just transformed me. And garments, man, I hated the way I looked in them. I just felt frumpy. I felt ugly. I felt fat. And I swear when I stopped wearing the garments, that's when I lost all this weight. It was like I tossed my garments, and along with tossing away my garments, I like threw away that poor self-esteem. And it like literally like weight just like fell off of me. And I think a huge part of it was like learning to discover, you know, myself in that manner. And garments totally just keep that from happening. But I think that the church likes to control us in a sexual way. And I was always told that, like, yeah, garments are a reminder of the covenants we make. But really, like, if you think about it, what's the first thing or what's the last thing you have to take off in order to have sex? It's going to be your garments. And so that's embarrassing. And it's going to stop you from doing something you don't want to do. I literally was told that by so many people.
But I can tell you from personal experience that
it does not
stop me from doing things I was not supposed to do. I was in the moment, you're just like, get those garments out of the way. Like,
I'm like, oh, sorry.
Oh, awkward. I would go, when I was at BYU Idaho, like towards the end of my time there, I was not active in the church, like emotionally, like I was completely out, but I was still a student. And my roommates, my friends, like everyone knew that I had served a mission and knew that I was endowed. So I'd wear my garments like day to day, but then I would go on dates with like boys from Tinder and like not wear my garments because I like, obviously on the date, you don't want to have the garments like ruin the moment, you know? But it's one of those things where, yeah, it's, I think the church doesn't want anyone to be empowered. And that goes for like men and women, and your sexuality and your self-confidence, even self-confidence in your body, even if it's not sexual, is still empowering. And I think garments are one of the tools that the church uses to like take that away and to just like, they want to like own as much of their members as they can. And with garments, they literally like own their body when they like look in the mirror at the end of the day, like, which is really sad to think about, that you can't even be like alone with yourself without this huge reminder on your body that really the church is in charge of you and your choices and your like bodily autonomy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Totally. Totally. I wonder how you would have reacted in the temple, because I mean, it's changed now just within the last couple years or so, but one of the covenants you have to make, whether you were going through like just as a single woman or to like go on a mission or even to get married, like one of the covenants you have to make is like hearkening and obeying your husband.
I think they changed that though.
They did.
They did.
Like in that was one of the changes. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I would have.
But I feel like at the time you were contemplating, I'm pretty confident in saying that was a part of it. I wonder how you would have reacted to that. Cause I feel like you would have not been.
Yeah, I would.
Cool, at least deep down with that.
It would have upset me because, so at the time I didn't consider these shelf items, but like before learning about the priesthood ban, as a teenager, I used to get really angry about the differences between like girls' camp and the boys getting to go on high adventure and like all of these other things. Like I didn't really want the priesthood just because I'm really introverted and I didn't want the pressure of blessing the sacrament in front of the whole congregation or giving someone a blessing or something like that. But I really, really got upset about some of the other differences. And I remember volunteering to raise money, like, hey, can we have archery at girls' camp? I priced it out. This was back when we still had the yellow pages, and I called different companies and I'm like, this is how much it would cost. God,
you are such a go-getter, little Jen. Well, archaeology Jen at six.
With the hammer.
Yes, and then with my the hammer.
Archery. 15-year-old archery Jen. Oh my, we need like Barbie, like,
ugh, like Jen Barbie through the Jen. Ages.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Well, I remember like bringing it up to my leaders and all my young women leaders. Well, one of them was really cool, but didn't have any authority. But the ones who had authority shot it down immediately. The plans were always to do quilting in these hot, unair-conditioned cabins or to write poetry or to, you know, obviously there's always the testimony meeting and all of these things. And I'm sitting there, this is camp. And the boys are going to the Florida Keys, or they're going on like a, you know, a 6-day hiking adventure in the Shenandoah, and we're quilting. So I priced out archery.
So mad right now.
Yeah, no, like, so at the time, but I didn't think it was, I still like really wanted to believe in the church and think that that was just local members being assholes. And also like the, you know, I wanted to blame it on my leaders who were really super homemakers and super like, you know, June Cleaver types. And I wanted to be like, well, they're just out to lunch. But they never gave me a straight answer. They just said no. And I took it to a priesthood leader in the congregation. And I said, why can't we do this? Like, everyone's just telling me no, but I think this is a great idea. We're already doing so much fundraising for High Adventure. Why can't we do a separate fundraiser for like just a few $100 and get archery kits for camp? And he actually gave me an honest answer, which pissed me off, but like I appreciated it. He actually straight up told me, he said, if women have High Adventures, then they'll be less likely to accept their roles. And they need to be wives and mothers. And if they have these adventures.
He said that to you?
He did. Yeah. And actually, even now, I appreciate it. You know, it's like, thank you for being honest with me.
At least he was honest, but damn.
Yeah. Well, and he's like, if young women get stimulated in that way, they're not going to be content to live within the home, which really is like the appropriate realm for them. So. I mean, at the time it wasn't a shelf item, but looking back, yeah, like it was probably something stewing back there. So if I'd gone,
of course,
and gotten in doubt.
And also that logic, like what, where in the scriptures was he getting this idea that.
Yeah. For on what authority do you have to say something like that?
That's well, actually, crazy. If you look at old conference talks, and I wish that I had the kind of like memory and recall that I could tell you, oh, Harold B. Lee said this on this day. But like, if you look at old conference talks, they actually do say stuff like that. You know,
that's
of course
crazy.
They do.
Crazy. I mean,
so
I guess.
Gross.
That's crazy to me because I wasn't raised Mormon, but I was raised very, very Christian. And I went to like, you know, youth summer camps, like through the church, and we did the boys and the girls, like we did all the things together. And it was very Christian. And I think those roles were still very much expected, but I just have never heard someone say that, well, if girls have exciting experiences, then they won't be content to be homemakers. That's crazy.
Yeah. Wow. It's pretty nuts. I still in retrospect can't believe he told me, but. You know, it was better and more respectful to do that, though, than to do what my other leaders were doing, which was saying, you know, patting me on
just
the head
saying
and
no.
Just saying, nope,
yeah.
I'm not going to give you an explanation. Like,
yeah,
whatever.
It is kind of validating to when you're, I don't know, I kind of can, like, gaslight myself into being like, was it really that crazy when I was a Mormon? But, like, having that experience where someone told you that, it can be like, oh, no, he, like, literally told me that it was crazy. Like, yeah.
Yep. That reminds me of an experience I had as a missionary. We were at a, what is it called? When you meet with the ward mission leader?
A council meeting?
Yeah, just like a ward councilor thing. Anyway, we were at his home and we were waiting for the elders to arrive, and his wife was, I don't know if she was on the phone or talking to their kid in the kitchen, just like in the other room. And I heard her speaking Spanish. Mind you, we are in Wisconsin. I'm a missionary in a member's home where both people grew up in the church. So I said, did she learn Spanish on a mission? To me, it makes perfect sense. She's this white, skinny woman in Wisconsin. Like, where else are you going to learn fluent Spanish? It was an honest question. And he looked at me straight in the eye and he said, no, my wife didn't need to serve a mission. She was way more competent than that.
Oh, that makes me so mad.
And my companion and I were like, and I was like, to be fair, I didn't have to serve a mission either. I was plenty competent before serving a mission. I don't know what you're saying in regards to being competent, but okay. And we just kind of sat there pissed off and stunned the entire time. And when we walked out with the elders after the meeting was over and we told them what happened, and the elders were like, he said that to you? And I was like, yeah.
Men
like,
will just say the craziest shit.
And you didn't
shit.
Rip his head off? And I was like, no. And they were like, I would have. And I was like, why weren't you there?
They weren't like, getting via peacemaker lessons from the age of 12. Give me a break. Like, sorry.
Seriously. It. And that, I think, was the first time I truly recognized the sexism in the church, because I wanted to be a mom. I wanted to get married. At the time, I wasn't even opposed to the idea of being a stay-at-home mom and having my husband, like, you know, go out and do whatever. To me, that just, like, aligned with, like, my own, like, wishes and dreams and hopes for the future. So I didn't, like, really think anything of it. But when he said that to me, I was like, are you trying to insinuate that women who can get married don't go on missions and women who can't get married go on missions? Or, like, what else are you trying to say here? Because it doesn't matter which way you spin it. You're not looking very nice right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, I heard that tons of times when I was growing up, especially as a teenager, where, you know, people speak a little more freely or whatever. But yeah, it was this idea that as a sister missionary, you only go on a mission if you can't get a husband. And that's why you had to wait the extra 2 years back then, longer than the men. And it was like this thing where people behind sister missionaries' backs sometimes would be like, oh, poor thing, I guess she couldn't get a husband. Like, it's like, fuck. You know, like, I wanted to go on a mission so I could learn another language or have an adventure or something. And then, of course, I lost my virginity, and at that point, that was a deal breaker, so I didn't try, but...
How dare you do the normal human thing and have sex?
I know!
How dare
Boo
you?
Me.
How dare you? Messing with other people's little factories.
You know, that makes me think of almost going the other way in sort of sexist towards, like, elders. I remember having conversations with people that were like, well, why do... like, boys serve for 2 years and girls serve for a year and a half. And I would hear people say all the time, well, it takes boys 2 years to learn what it only takes a year and a half for, like, a girl to learn.
I heard that too. And I would be like, well, yeah.
And yeah.
And now I'm like, ooh, shit, that's toxic.
Yeah. Which sort of, like, plays into this idea that, like, men have to serve missions because they won't be the people they need to be if they don't serve missions. And that for women, it's more like an optional thing. Like, they already, essentially, like, they already are who they are. Like, serve a mission or not, like, fine, whatever. We don't really care. But for, like, men, it's essential because they need it. And as a sister missionary, I was like, that's right, it only takes me a year and a half to learn what it takes you 2 years. And now I'm like, I'm so sorry to all those elders who I, like, belittled just because of their gender.
Seriously, elders, if there's an elder that served with either one of us, I am so sorry for anything that I did to perpetuate the toxicity towards men. Because it goes both ways. It is not just sexist towards women. It is not just the female body of the church that has to deal with shit like that. So I am so sorry, because I absolutely perpetuated things of that nature.
And no, holy shit.
Totally.
Similar to how, like, every episode could lead to talking about polygamy, like, every episode could lead to talking about missions, because missions have, like, so much going on in them. Like, they're just so fucked in every direction. But yeah,
consider, like, yourself blessed that you did not go. I don't regret my mission, but I do think that a lot of the trauma and shit that I'm trying to work through now stems directly from a lot of the things that stirred up while I was on my mission.
Well, and same, like, I, you know, was traumatized as a teenager, like, by that worthiness interview, in, like, one in particular, and, you know, a few other things, but ramping up the pressure of all that to be at a church school is really, like, probably the most traumatic time of my life. And I think a mission would have been even more so. And they never tell you, just like the worthiness interviews, they never tell you what to expect on a mission. It's going to be a great adventure. You're going to have the spirit, you know, you're going to do all these things. You're going to see the world. Like, they build it up. And I had no idea when I wanted to go on a mission how much control they exercise over you. How, I mean, yeah, I'm relieved I didn't go on a mission, because I ended up being like actively suicidal for several years in my 20s, like starting when I was at SVU. And I don't know, like, I don't think I could have handled a mission, honestly, but also that the pressure of, like, if you go home early, you know, all the questions in people's minds and all the shame and things, I think that that pressure cooker would have probably been too much for me at that age.
But I think that is what kept me on my mission, like finishing mm-hmm. my mission, because there were multiple interviews I did with my mission president where I was like crying and I was like, I want to go home, I want to go home, I want to go home. And then he would be like, do you want me to send you home? And I'd be like, no, you can't send me home, like I can't go home. And it wasn't because, like, home is great, I have great family, I have great parents, like I was going to school, like there's nothing wrong with home, but it was just that fear of judgment and the assumptions that people would have of why I like couldn't finish my mission, or you know, either thinking that I like chose not to finish it for some reason, or thinking that I had sinned, or that I couldn't handle it, that I wasn't strong enough, like those kinds of things. Like that's probably like the main thing that kept me on my mission so that I finished it all the way. So that's totally understandable. And it is, you know, it is a pressure cooker. Like it comes from all directions in terms of you're scared to go home, you're scared to leave your apartment and go track to talk to people, you're scared to be with your companion, depending on who they are. Like if you have a bad companion, it's like no matter where you look, it's just difficult. And I think in the church, certainly on missions, but in general in the church, I think there's this idea that if things are difficult for you, that it's your fault, and like you need to like introspect and you need to study more and pray more and develop those Christ-like attributes so you can handle it, instead of outside of the church where it's like if you're in a situation where you are feeling like thoughts of self-harm or like this in any kind of like extreme emotional state, the logical thing to do is like, well, what can you do to like remove yourself from that situation? And it's not, I've never been to a therapist outside of the church and explain my anxiety and have them say, well, have you like thought about how you could develop attributes that would like fix your anxiety, you know? So it is really difficult on a mission and just in the church in general, that like mental game of, you know, is it me or is it the environment I'm in or both?
Yeah. Where did you grow up, Jen?
So I grew up in Northern Virginia, in Chantilly, Virginia. It's like 45 minutes outside of DC. And then,
so what is the church presence like out there?
There's actually a pretty strong presence of, you know, I've never lived in the Morador. So, you know, it's not that thing where.
Thank God for you.
Have, Lena, oh my. Is Sally still there?
I actually really want to visit, though. Like, for the longest time after, like, being in the church, I never wanted to go to Utah. I was like that, you know, I'm not interested, but.
Like, I'm not that kind of Mormon, so no thank you.
Right, exactly. You're not a pioneer. It's like, you know, there's like enough self-righteousness here, and I'd heard all these stereotypes. Although I have to just say those stereotypes are such bullshit. Like I've met a lot of Utah Mormons. Now they're pretty much the same as like Virginia Mormons. There's maybe just a little more shaming about like Diet Coke, you know, or something like that. But like I'm guessing in Utah, there's a little more shaming about caffeinated sodas, just based on stuff I've seen on social media. But like, no, it's exactly the same. I love all these members online, like defending toxic behaviors, being like, oh, that's a Utah Mormon thing. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like everything that I'm seeing described here, I grew up with as well, like all the way across the country. But
yeah,
but no, we had a really big stake, a really active stake. You know, there was a good Mormon presence, but I would say like in my high school, there were probably only, say if my high school was 2000 people, there were maybe, I'm guessing here, but maybe 30 Mormons or something. And we all sort of knew who each other were, obviously, but, it wasn't like half the high school's Mormon or something, but
yeah. So heavy, but not Utah heavy. Yeah. Heavy enough to like have like an active stake and stuff like that. Is there a temple there?
Yeah, there's a temple in Washington, D.C. And in fact, it's...
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, it's like on our main highway around D.C.
Ugh.
So you can't escape it. Like when you're going around the bend, it's like this towering temple that you always see. And there's...
Son of a bitch. Of course it is.
All the members here, so I'm in Wisconsin, they go to the Chicago temple now. But before the Chicago Temple was built in, like, I think the 80s at some point, like, members here would go all the way to Washington, D.C. to go to that temple. Like, that mm-hmm. was the closest temple. Oh, wow. So it's so strange to think about, like, how, like, I'm just trying to picture people that I know, like, members that I know, like, driving that far to go to the temple in D.C. But I guess... Mormons, they're really dedicated, so
Mormons are gonna sense. Mormon
Mormons
they're gonna Mormons do gonna Mormon. What they're gonna do. So when you went to SVU, did you end up graduating there?
No, so I'm gonna give you like the Reader's Digest version, but basically I had lost my virginity right before going to school, went to my bishop like the first week of school to repent. He was really really judgmental and really unkind about it. Like he basically told me like, oh, you clearly didn't mean it when you made your baptismal covenants, which was shocking to me because it's like I was at until that moment I hadn't realized how those covenants could get held over you, you know.
I mean
I thought that there was some understanding that okay, yeah, I'm a spiritual adult now that I'm 8 years old, but like also I'm a child and mm-hmm. you know, and it wasn't like he was talking to me as if I'd been a fully fledged, fully informed adult, like at eight,
which you were not.
No,
at all.
Not
at
any, in any way.
No, not in any capacity.
Especially when in the church, like sexuality is really like avoided. I think I had conversations with my mom about sex when I was Christian, so it was like purity culture conversations about sex, but I think I had one conversation with her when I was maybe like 12, and then like that was it, and we like never ever talked about it. So this idea that an 8 year old would even like know or understand like really what chastity is, like what sexual purity is just insane, especially in the Mormon church where like really like most Mormon families I think avoid talking about those kinds of things with their children, and yeah. they really try to shelter, like kids aren't supposed to watch like PG-13 movies or like go to sleepovers at other people's houses. So how would you at 8 years old have known that?
Right, yeah, exactly. I mean, that was like one of those moments where I just remember such a distinct physical response to what he was saying, because also you're taught that bishops have discernment and when they're acting as bishop. And so, and I am a super literal person. So like those types of teachings I took really seriously, that he is looking with God's eyes into my soul and seeing who I really am. And in a,
which is what adds to the trauma and the harm of a bishop's interview is the idea, the concept of that being, you know, God's physical manifestation here on earth to help you go through the repentance process.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I went in already devastated. Like when I lost my virginity, again, like I don't want to share too much because it's also someone else's story, but like it was happening for 2 to 3 seconds, and I kicked him off me violently, locked myself in his bathroom for hours, and was just like sobbing and hitting myself and like all of these things, because I was like, oh my God, I'm basically a murderer. Sorry. You know, like I'm a horrible person. Like even if I repent, I'm a licked cupcake now. I'm like all these things that can never be taken back because of this like 2 seconds. So I was already going in like really feeling like I had no worth as a human being. And then to add to that, like this, that I'm basically a murderer, that I'm this like horrible person, to add to that, that I'm also a covenant breaker, you know, that I'm like disloyal and I have no integrity and I'm dishonest because I didn't keep a covenant that I made when I was 8. Sorry.
It's okay.
Like, don't apologize. Like, we cry all the time.
That's something that really that was a value that did mean a lot to me, is like being a person of my word. And I mean, he just was so cruel with the way he treated me in that process. And I went to him a few other times, and as I went back to him, I was telling him that I was having sexual thoughts, and he was telling me that I clearly wasn't even trying. And so I became like, I already had problems with, I didn't have this term now, but like at the time, I have the term now, I didn't know then, but I was dealing with like definite scrupulosity, like where I was just trying to do all these things to appease God. And so like, I started really taking it up a notch. And one of the things about growing up in Virginia is you do have a really diverse community around you, even if every day you're interacting with Mormons, and Mormons are your main community because all your time is going to mutual and steak dances and stuff. I had Muslim friends in high school, and I remember Ramadan. So I started doing a Ramadan type fast every day, where I would wake up before sunrise, sing hymns because of that scripture in DNC that says that like you get brownie points in heaven every time you sing a hymn. So I was like singing hymns, reading from my scriptures, and I would eat one croissant, and then I wouldn't eat again until nighttime fell. And so I was trying to like fast, you know, do like a modified fast like that every day. I was singing hymns before bed. I started like self-harming to sort of show God that like, I know I'm worthless. Like maybe if you see that I accept the way you see me, that you'll have more compassion on me, or like you won't view me as a murderer. Like you'll see that this hurts me. So that started spiraling really badly. And then I had a professor who noticed how depressed I was. And he told me that he would either call my parents or I had to go see the school psychologist. And I didn't want him to call my parents. You know, it was like my worst nightmare was my parents finding out that I wasn't a virgin, or that, you know, all this stuff. So I was like, no, like, you can't call my parents. Like, I don't want them to know. So I went to the school psychologist, and there's so many ethical issues with this that I wish I'd been aware of when I was younger, but there was no guarantee of confidentiality with him. So I couldn't tell him anything that could cause me to get kicked out of school and lose my ecclesiastical endorsement. So I had to speak in a really roundabout way. And so I would write him like poems, which is like so cringeworthy now, or like make drawings or things that sort of alluded to how I was feeling and why, but like I could never be direct with him. And he basically, but what I was trying to show him in the poems is that I was thinking about killing myself all the time. Like I was, you know, and I was feeling like this terrible person. And again, I also didn't know if self-harm was like an honor code issue. You know, I was much more concerned about the chastity stuff, but I didn't know. So I couldn't speak to him frankly about anything, but I was trying to give him an idea. And he also was just very dismissive. He was kinder than my bishop, but was just sort of like, okay, you're not telling me anything, so how can I help you? But he basically told me, if you're experiencing any negativity, you're just not reading the Book of Mormon enough. And I tried to tell him, like at that point, I was literally every day waking up at 4 a.m. to have my croissant, sing my hymns, read the Book of Mormon, read the Bible, read from all these scriptures. And
you're literally torturing yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in retrospect, yes, it was such an unhealthy place to be as an 18-year-old. And then he was like, well, whatever you're doing, it's not enough. And so I just got so desperate after that. Like, I didn't know how I could be doing more because I was already obsessively doing that. And it wasn't enough. And again, like, I didn't think the psychologist had discernment, but he had a PhD and he had the priesthood. And he was the person that my priesthood holding professor told me I had to go to. So there still was this feeling of like, what he says has a lot of weight. And it was maybe a week or two after that, like, I don't know the exact time, but I actually did. And you might, I guess, I don't know when trigger warnings are appropriate. You might want to put one at the beginning of the show, but I did make my first attempt on my life. And I had all this ADD medication and I took all of it. I took a bunch of painkillers and like vitamins, because I read in some magazine that like you can overdose on vitamins. So like, again, like this is a sort of naive 18-year-old approach to things. But and then again, I didn't want anyone to know what was going on with me. So when I started getting really violently ill, I just didn't go to class, you know, and I ended up failing out. And then, you know, I'm sure that if I had been honest with people about not why I was going through that, but what I was going through, that I could have stayed in school or that my parents would have understood. But I was just so humiliated and so mortified. And again, I thought that I was a murderer, basically, you know, because being a murderer is something so out there. Like, I'm not a mafioso, like, I'm not going to murder somebody. So it's basically the worst thing you can do. And so I told my parents that I'd started partying, you know, I painted myself as this like party animal and everything. So then I
just, that was so much better than having sex.
Right. And so I transferred up to George Mason, and of course, like, continued having bouts with this stuff and made additional attempts on my life, like in the subsequent years of my 20s, because I was still dealing with it. And, anyway, sorry, this is such a long tangent.
No, it's totally fine.
It's amazing. You're totally good.
but yeah, no, I didn't graduate from SVU. I was there, I think, for 3 semesters, so a year and a half. I could be wrong, because again, that time of my life, all the everything is so compressed, and you know, I
totally,
yeah, I don't have a clear timeline, unfortunately. But
so when you moved, you said you made additional attempts on your life after that. At what point did you start to feel like there was a turnaround for you? What do you think helped you?
Yeah, so that's actually, I remained having suicidal ideation for the next like 10 years, I would say. And within that 10 years, I had that first attempt on my life at SVU, and then 2 others while I was up here, going to the singles ward and, you know, trying to be in the church, but also, you know, sort of living a double life with it because I felt like I didn't belong. But it wasn't until a couple of years ago that I realized the church wasn't true. So I stopped attending in 2008 because of Prop 8. I still very much believe the church was true. But, you know, you take all the harmful stuff that was like actively harming me with licked cupcakes and chewed gum and purity culture and worthiness interviews and all of that, and then suddenly seeing all of that rhetoric ramped up and put so hard on the LGBTQ community. And I think there was something about seeing that done to, like, when it's directed at you, you almost feel like, well, I deserve this, or I, you know, I should be able to take this, or I need to just internalize this. But when you see it being done to someone else, I think you realize just how cruel and unnecessary and like not okay it is. And, you know, you can sort of sit through a little bit and say, well, maybe this person's a bigot, or maybe this person's a bigot. But during Prop 8, it was every lesson, every activity, every institute. It was just, I mean, church was 3 hours. It was every single lesson in church. And I just was getting more and more upset. And just, we were having this combined Relief Society priesthood lesson in the singles ward. And they had all these quotes passed out for people to read about the dangers of homosexuality and how it was going to destroy society. And all of these things. And I just thought, I can't raise a kid in this. Like, I can't, you know? And I thought it was true, but my thought was, I'm already fucked. Like, I will take the brunt of not raising a child in the church, and I'll shield them from the church so they're not responsible for not joining it. And then they can be baptized in the afterlife, but like, I'm not doing this. And I got up and I didn't realize it was gonna be my last Sunday. I thought maybe I would cool down, but I just never went back after that. But I still thought it was true. I still thought that I was basically a murderer. And then a couple of years ago, I grew up with a really good friend who was very faithful in the church. Like, she'd been Relief Society president. She'd gotten married, had kids, was a homemaker, and was just like a pillar of like the perfect Mormon woman. And she posted something on Facebook about church history that I didn't know about, because at that point I had never given myself permission to look outside the correlation department. I still thought all of that was anti-Mormon lies. I thought, I can't do the church, but I still thought it was true. And then suddenly this really faithful member is posting something, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what is this? And she gave me, that act of hers gave me permission. And I went and I found the Year of Polygamy podcast and was like, what the actual fuck? Like, we had just gotten our dog. So I was taking him to the dog park and staying there for like an hour and a half so I could just keep listening, because I was like, this isn't anti-Mormon. Like, this, you know, because in the early episodes of that podcast, she's very much trying to like make a place for knowing the true history, but still being faithful. And it was exactly what I needed to hear. You know, it was like, and suddenly it all just, it was like pure joy, you know, so much relief. Like, it all came crashing down. And I said, I'm not evil. Like, you know, I'm not perfect, but like, I'm not evil. Like, I'm not a murderer. I'm not this horrible person who had the light and the truth and couldn't hack it, you know? And yeah, I mean, I still struggle with a lot of anxiety and a lot of, you know, just like, I have, you know, moments of depression for sure, but like, it's, I've never once been like, I need to die, you know, or felt like that desperation to just end it because I'm such a horrible person. And that's part of why we're doing the candles. It's like, I don't want anyone else to sit in the place that I was sitting. And I know thousands of people are, where they think that they're the only one who's so unworthy, or who's so affected by Satan, or who's so evil. And, you know, none of us are alone, and the church is lying to us. And like, I don't know. Anyway, sorry. I like monologuing here.
Oh, you're good. Shit. You're good.
Cheers to that.
Yes.
Holy hell. Amen. Yes. Cheers.
I think, well, first of all, thank you for sharing that.
Yes.
Because I'm sure it's difficult. I mean, Lena and I, now it seems like doing the podcast is like not that big of a deal. But certainly at first, there was like a real like vulnerability to it. And I think even like not on a podcast, it can be really like vulnerable to share your experience with the church, because at one point in your life, you were like avid that it was completely true and you were like completely converted. For me, ooh, hello Chandler.
Oh,
it's just
he just wants to be in the podcast so bad.
No, he just wants my headphones, like
oh yeah, it's like fair, a string fair.
Yeah,
yeah, he's like, ooh.
Whenever I get passionate, he's like, it's my time to shine. But I do think there's, for me, there was like this embarrassment to go from literally being a missionary, or but just like being so converted and having this like strong conviction that like the church was true, and then to swing the other way and to be like, the church is lying to people, the church is abusing people, and in a way every member of the church is a victim of the church. And to swing the other way, it can feel very, you do have to be really vulnerable, I think, to share those things. So we really appreciate you like opening up and sharing that. And I know like some of it was difficult to talk about because it was difficult to listen to. And I also would like to say, because I think everyone deserves this, that like on behalf of the church, like you deserve an apology, but since that's never going to happen, sorry, but like I can apologize, you know, like for me, like once again, like just that idea, like I'm so sorry that as a Mormon, you know, I perpetuated the culture that allows 18-year-old girls to feel that way about themselves, and not just 18-year-old girls, but like everyone to feel that way about themselves. Because I do think that when you're convinced the church is true, it is really easy to convince yourself that you are worthless. Like in the Book of Mormon, it talks about how like we are dirt, like we are nothing, but that's not true. And the church is lying to you about so many things, but especially that great big lie that like you are worthless and you are nothing. I think that's one of like the most harmful narratives that the church tells. And I'm just so sorry that you had to experience that to such an extreme.
Well, thanks. And yeah, I mean, thank you. Yeah, I think it's so many people, you know, like I know that I'm a really literal person and maybe I'm primed to take those things like to an extreme level, but it's so many people. And I perpetuated it too, even when I was suffering from it. One of the memories I really regret is a non-Mormon friend of mine in high school asked me if she was a whore. And I remember like all of me wanted to just put my arms around her and say, girl, you're good, you know? And then I thought, oh no, but the church says not to condone wickedness and she's not a virgin. And like, you know, and that if I'm condoning that, then I'm not loving her the right way. And I'm not leading her towards the gospel. And so I was just silent. And that silence meant yes, you know? And it's like, for you to be vulnerable enough to, and in pain enough to ask someone, do you think I'm a whore? And then for one of your best friends to just be like, you know, I mean, it's awful. Yeah. Like I perpetuated it in so many ways and, I don't know, just here's to healing now and like perpetuating it.
You mentioned that's part of why you do the candles. So how did you get into making candles? And then how did you decide to combine candle making with almost like raising awareness for how batshit crazy the church is? Like, how did you decide to like combine those two?
So it was really selfish. Like I wanted ex-Mormon candles and I spent probably 2 hours searching and I'm like, what the fuck? Nobody's doing this, really? Like
this is brilliant. Why is no one capitalizing on this?
Well, because I love candles. Like I've wanted to be a candle maker since the fifth grade. Our school had this medieval day. And I remember medieval day was like the best day of elementary school for me. Like I
can't wait for medieval Barbie Jen to come out.
So I remember like I was taking violin lessons at the time, so I was carrying that around and I had this like big white shirt and these stockings that I was dressed as a minstrel and we had this candle making activity and I was just totally entranced. And my grandmother's maiden name is Chandler, which is candle maker, so like, oh my, I was gosh, like, this is meant to be. Like
Chandler is a family name in my family as well.
Oh, and you're from the Midwest, right?
I am from the yeah.
So my family on that side is from Kentucky. So we might actually
wow. Chandlers, they're like in the Illinois region. So if only we had done our family history.
It's not too late.
Damn it, you two.
It's not too late. I would be so happy if I found out we were related. That would be amazing.
I actually do have a lot of my family history. I did do a lot of my family history and I still have a lot of it. So I'll do some digging and I'll see if there's any Chandlers also, that were in
fucking
Kentucky.
Hilarious. Oh my God.
And then in our next episode, we'll just have someone from like the church history department on as a guest who's like...
But yeah, so I'd always wanted to be a candle maker, but I put that in the back of my head because, oh, it's not practical, you know, whatever. But throughout my life, like I've really enjoyed buying candles and I've really enjoyed assigning, like this is something that primed me to end up being really into Mormonism, is like the sort of magical aspect of it. But I always like choose candles. I'm like, oh, this one smells like leather. So it's like old books. So I'm going to light this one when I'm studying and it's going to like, there's going to be magic from the candle that helps me. Like, you know, it's like setting an intention. So then I discovered like candle companies that had really cool labels. Like, I don't know if you guys have seen Frostbeard candles, but they do book lovers candles. And so I'd like, they're awesome. And the other candle companies too. But I'd have these like very specific candles, you know, that I was like, I'm only lighting this when I have this intention. And then I was dying to have something I could light for this new period in my life of being ex-Mormon, because everything I was like exposing truth and and learning and deconstructing like all of these narratives about myself and all of this stuff. And I needed a candle for that. And I was sort of using these other candles and like making tangential connections in my mind and being like, well, this one can sort of like relate to that. But at a certain point, I was like, I want an ex-Mormon candle. And I was like scouring Google and Etsy, and I realized no one was doing it. So I talked to Adrian, and here we are.
And that's really amazing.
Liked, yeah.
That is amazing. Well, how long have you guys been doing your thing?
So we started making candles in 2020 when he was, well, he's still furloughed. He's in the hotel industry, so he's been furloughed. And we're like, well, let's learn to do this. And he loves cooking and is a really good cook, and he loves doing things with his hands. So it was something that like really appealed to both of us for different reasons. So we just started making candles. And once we really got the science of it down and, you know, got into our groove, it was like, okay, we're going to try this with the Exmo candles. And, you know, it was sort of terrifying, but it's been amazing. So we get emails from people talking about their experiences, and there's so much in common, you know, across geographic regions, across ages, like things that we're taught to believe about ourselves and, you know, all of these things. And I don't know. Anyways, I'm rambling again.
That's okay.
No, you're spot on. I love it. I love that you just like took the pandemic and you're like, well, we could do something with this time. Why not? And you've turned it into a really successful candle making business. I love it.
Thank you, ladies.
Do you feel like it's kind of like helped on your healing journey to like have a place to like put that trauma?
Yeah, actually, I wasn't prepared for how good it would feel. And I put this on our website, and I've said this on social media before, but it is so powerful, like to have that physical object, but also like the making of the physical object. Like one of our candles is Licked Cupcake, which is probably like, for reasons we've discussed, like the most personal candle for me that we have. And like pouring that into a jar and then lighting it on fire later, like it means something to me every time. Like, and we've been doing this for a while now, and it still means something to me every time. Like, it feels amazing. And even our more lighthearted ones, like Ode to Peepstone, you know, just like poking fun at church history, like that too, it's like, it just, it feels amazing. Like I'm really happy other people want these candles so we can justify like continuing to make them. but yeah, no, it's actually more profound for me than I thought it would be. Like I thought it would be fun and I thought it would give me a product I wanted, but it's been the most healing thing I've done since, you know, since that initial research of, you know, into church history.
I do think there's like, you know, for me, like one of the hardest things of leaving the church was losing that like community. One of the best things about being Mormon for me was like, I could go anywhere and find a Mormon church on a Sunday and find people who like were kind to me and accepted me and knew what I was about. And leaving that and losing that sense of community is really hard. And sort of slowly finding like the ex-Mormon community has been really healing for me. And it's just fun to have something. Like I have the Lazy Learner candle to like have something that's like, not only did I like leave the church, but now I'm like buying things to have in my home that are just like fuck yous to the church that like
yes,
took so much of my life. And it's like merch for your like religious deconstruction, like, which is not something I ever thought I like wanted or needed. But when we started doing our podcast, and that's really when I like discovered your Instagram, I was like, I do need that. And I do want that. Like, I need that in my house. That's just like taking this horrible, shitty conference talk and this lazy learner term that just like hurts me deeply and turning it into something that like brings me so much joy, like makes me laugh and like fills my home with like yummy smells. It's just, it's such a great product, such a great idea. And I think it is healing for me just to like have one and to feel like I'm a part of this like community again of people who hate the mm-hmm. church. Like, and it's not just sad, but it's like fun and it's like pretty and happy. I think it's so cool.
It just kind of goes to show you how easy it is to like turn that pain into something that you really do grow and learn from and benefit from, and then take it out into the world and help others benefit. Because just like, you know, Meg, just like you, like, you know, the porn shoulders, I kind of said at the beginning of the podcast, you know, how difficult it was for me to feel like I could express myself in a way that was just me. And, you know, the purity culture and the way the church views sex and the harm that was caused after my court of love, like all of that kind of trickled down into being so pissed off anytime someone referred to a woman as walking pornography because she was wearing something that wasn't modest. And it does kind of allow you to take that trauma and like put it into something physical. And there is something like so powerful about lighting that motherfucker on fire and like being able to like kind of laugh and like joke about it. And I know for me, like, humor is a big way that I heal. I am kind of pessimistic. I'm, you know, a little morbid. Laughing at the fact that the church is telling women this is a way for me to kind of like therapeutically work through what that actually has done to me internally. So I love that not only has it been healing for you, you have been able to just like take it and help other people heal on their journey. Because I feel like, I don't know, maybe when I'm like 60, the church won't be as like pivotal in my life. But right now it's a huge deal and kind of hard to ignore.
Well, especially because they got us all like as teenagers or as young adults, and like right when you're forming your identity, you're in church like 7 days a week in one form or another, like,
yeah.
And these are, I mean, I don't think it'll ever be out of me. Like, I think I could have dementia and be 85 years old and I will still be thinking about the Mormon church. And that means so much to me, actually.
I hope my last words are just like, fuck Elder Oaks. Like, with my last breath. Just like, fuck Dallin H. Oaks. Just,
you and then make your gravestone to like say that at the bottom.
That's a great idea. Here lies Meg,
loving friend, sister, daughter, in tiny little words, fuck Russell M. Nelson.
Yeah, I just want it to be like, in remembrance of her life, let us take a moment to fuck Elder Oaks. Like, just.
I'm so in favor of that idea. I love that. Yeah, like, I seriously want to put in my will. Like, I know it won't be legally binding, but some provision that, like, if you baptize me, I will not get you to
baptize my ass.
I want you.
Or like endow me or whatever. Yeah. Or like, I've also fantasized about legally changing my name to I do not consent to these temple ordinances, like to have that as my middle name. So oh like my if, God, when they invariably genius. Do take me into the temple, it'll be like Jennifer and I do not consent to these temple ordinances, Renard.
That is the best idea. I've never That's even thought. That's a big thought. Fuck you. I mean, I guess now I kind of just believe that when I'm dead, I'm dead. So I don't really give a fuck what happens to my name or memory. But I do like the idea of my name being said in the temple and everyone in the room being very uncomfortable. Like, that's the most I could hope for. That's a great idea. I love that.
That's the most I could hope for that. My friends, that's the dream.
Well, that's everyone, so go to funny. Your lawyers. We can,
yeah, run to your lawyer, pull out your will, think of a name. Because if it's not something like really witty, like I do not consent, you could always have some sort of, you know, name. Like,
my middle name could be fuck Elder Oaks.
That would be awesome. Or like Korahor, but spelled with like a WHORE.
So Mormon, spelling and everything. Oh my That's God.
So fucking funny.
The brilliance. Chef's kiss. Okay, so Are you surprised that we've gone on too long?
I'm actually shocked. This is actually so much fun because I've been forgetting that we're recording, and
I told you, it starts to kind of feel like you're just hanging out with some friends and you're just talking.
Drinking.
You have a couple sips of alcohol. You feel pretty good. It's like, before you know it, like hours have passed and you're like, oops.
Well, and it's
so anyway.
Well, it's great because I crave ex-Mormon interaction, and it's really great in writing on Instagram and Facebook and all of that. But like in Virginia, I don't have any ex-mos. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that there are some around and I need to be proactive about meeting them, but this has been amazing. Like, thank you guys so much because I've loved every minute of this.
I am so happy you got brave and you decided to come on the podcast for someone that we interviewed the very first time on the show. Gold, my friend. We picked a winner.
And you should know that
we picked a winner.
I was also nervous because we've never interviewed anyone on the show. I was like,
no,
what if she sucks? But you don't. You're great. You're
no.
Like,
oh my God.
Amazing.
And then, and we like, we're trying to figure out, like, do we do something that's like kind of silly, which is why I like came up with all these questions, which we'll talk about in a minute. Do we just like include her in an episode plan? I was actually going to be like, have you seen the South Park episode? Do you want to like react to that with us? And I was like almost against the classic interview idea just because I didn't want to like make you feel uncomfortable or whatever. And somehow it just like
just morphed into that,
unrolled into that. And I'm actually really happy that we got to like, as I dump everything everywhere, I'm really happy that we got to like hear your story because Opie, aww. I swear.
I can just see like the tiny little bit of fur.
He's a mom.
Don't let him fool you. No, it's doubt. A massive cat. Like, you can only see like a 1/10 of his, like the tithing of his body. Like, he's enormous.
Oh my gosh.
He's about 15 pounds.
I love the tithing of his body. I feel like that could tie that as a garment somehow. I don't know how, though, because it's definitely more than 10% that they cover.
Yeah, actually.
Seriously, if you're covering at least 10%, you're good. That's how I feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cover up the 10% that no one, like, absolutely needs to see, and you're good.
My face, yeah.
You know? Yeah. You're like, put a little mask on, you just run around naked.
The temple veil.
Oh, God. I need one of those too. I want a temple outfit so bad.
So here's the thing, is I just gave mine away because I didn't want to throw it away because I didn't want someone to spend money, like give the church money on garbage. So I gave it to this girl I know who's an active member. But if I had known that you wanted these things, like, I would have hung on to them for you. Oh, I still think we can make it happen to get
yes,
you.
Yes, actually, fingers crossed. Maybe people will hear our garments discussion and reach out.
I mean, Lena has her temple
comment
stuff
below, you guys. Yeah, but I'm also very fat.
Okay, but I meant like your veil and your sash and your, it's just a white dress. That. Like the dress isn't important.
That's can true. I say, by the way, it's not like important. How pissed I would have been as a bride, because they don't tell you that either. You
guys,
like, oh my God.
I know this has been discussed elsewhere.
I did not get married
in
my $1,300 wedding dress.
That's so fucked up.
I did not.
Like, is that, why didn't you? Because I've been to other like temple ceilings where the bride has. Is it because it's like the dress has to be like completely white? I know it has to be like,
and it was completely white. There were no beads. It was all lace, but it wasn't to my wrists.
Oh, you're
kidding. And I had kind of like a lower cut, and so it didn't come up to my collarbone.
Wait a minute. So I don't know the temple like modesty standards. So it has to be to your wrist and to your collarbone.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, because you can, I mean, technically, you
a
can
lot
wear.
Of people will wear it up to their neck just to like be safe.
Wow. You don't want God seeing any more of your body than he already like made.
When
like,
I then he already sees like in the initiatory.
Yeah, I
know.
My temple dress was, this is a tangent, but I went through the temple in Chicago, which is a pretty small temple. But next to it, there is a little baby like distribution center where they sell like garments and the temple stuff. And my temple dress, there was like three options, and so like I just picked the one that I liked the most, but I didn't really like any of them, and it was like not special at all, but it was just like this, like, you know, white dress, and it had like sort of embroidered like leaves on it, but it went down, you know, to the wrist, and it was like long and everything. And I remember being in the temple, and I went with my mom, and I also went with my friend's parents, who I was very close to. And I remember her being, my friend's mom, being like, oh my God, you just look so beautiful. Like, this is how you're meant to look. And I was like, this is the worst dress I've ever worn. Like, like, I knew what she meant, and I appreciated like the spiritual compliment of like, you're meant to be here. But I was like, if this is the best I've ever looked, then that's really sad, because I hated my temple dress. But there wasn't options in the distribution center in Chicago. It was like, there was like three options. That was it. I think you can technically wear, I don't know about for men, but I think for women, you can wear any dress, or even a skirt and like a sweater or like a top, as long as it is modest enough. And
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yep.
You don't have to buy it from the temple, but I didn't know that. Like, and my mom's a convert too, so that's that's where she bought her temple dress. Like,
yeah.
Pisses me off. I wouldn't have gotten married in January. I wouldn't have worn that dress. I loved my dress, but that's not what I would have worn.
Right.
And things just would have been so different had I have felt like I had the freedom to do what I wanted when we got married, versus like appeasing all the Mormons in my life. But that's neither here nor there.
And you guys should do an episode about that, because I would totally
that is a whole other conversation. Mormon weddings.
And I couldn't even go to your wedding, because it was like right after I had left on my mission.
You were, I got married on the 28th of January, and you left when?
I left January 3rd, so I was in New Mexico, MTC, like eating questionably cooked chicken and like getting a tan. I probably like said to my district,
questionably cooked chicken.
I probably said to my district while eating said chicken, I was probably like, my best friend's getting married today. Not even questioning why I like wasn't at my best friend's wedding. Like, I was like, but of course here I am eating this chicken in Mexico. Like, being a Mormon makes you do some weird shit.
You were not the only friend of mine who was on their mission and couldn't be there.
Yeah. Bummer.
Sucks to be Mormon sometimes.
I'll
y'all.
Be at your like vow renewal if you ever have one of those.
I will be in a white jumpsuit that like cuts super low, because like I love jumpsuits and rompers.
Like Madonna.
Yes, with like full-on 1940s glam hair with like these kick-ass shoes.
That sounds amazing. You go, girl.
And I will not be wearing garments.
You should make underneath it. The jumpsuit out of old garments.
And the veil to like have him lift up.
And the veil is just a straight up temple veil.
Or you could have him like, you know how they have the garter that he would pull off your leg? You should like have him pull the garments off of you and then like throw them to a group of guys.
Wave them around and fling them across the room.
Yeah, baby. Damn. Well, now that we've gotten out of hand, I think the best way to end the episode today is by drawing one of these random questions in the hat. Now, if it sucks, because my original plan was to just have conversations based off of the questions, because some of them are like really dumb, like what's your favorite movie? But some of them are kind of intense. So if the question sucks, we can skip and pull another one.
If it's too intense, just give it to Opie to play with.
He will gladly take it. Okay. I also don't have a Joseph Smith hat. I feel like I need to purchase one.
Mm-hmm. eBay, man. You get some really cool. You can actually get an antique one for pretty cheap. Sorry, this is one of my hobbies when I can't sleep.
I need like an antique hat, and then I need to go and find one of those seer stones.
I'll send you a rock from Lake Michigan.
But it has to look authentic.
I'll get you a round brown one.
There you go. Okay. This one looks long, so I'm hope. Oh my God. If you had to choose between wearing temple clothes to every event or celebration.
This is topical, because we were just talking about this.
Or wearing garments, bra over, for every sexual encounter from here until you die? Which would you choose?
Temple clothes, so like the dress, the veil, the sash.
The entire outfit.
To every celebration or...
Every celebration or event. So a date.
Garments with bra.
A wedding, sex. A funeral, all of it.
Gosh.
Could you imagine showing up to a funeral and you're just like...
Actually, when you said funeral, that was because I was thinking, oh no, definitely the temple garments at like, or the temple outfit at like all these events, because A, I'm an introvert and I have social anxiety a lot, so I like don't go to that many, and B, it could be a conversation starter, which is really useful for introverts. So I'm like,
ooh, that's true.
But at a funeral, I feel like that could really be,
could you
like,
dye them super... black?
Ooh, nope.
Oh, okay, man. So as like as they're intended,
as is. Garments too.
You can't alter them, I suppose that's the rule.
No, you can't alter them.
You know, though, yeah. If I started doing that, I would probably get disinvited to funerals and things that I don't really
like,
enjoy.
Okay,
so
do not invite Auntie Jen. She's not welcome anymore.
So I'm going to go with the wearing temple clothes to all these things. Although, I guess the silver lining to the other option would be like, it could be a... become a better no
it could be a little king.
Yeah, it's
a
thing. But no,
there is Mormon porn out there. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. In fact I dated a guy who thought garments were really sexy, and I was like,
that's amazing.
All right, well, I'm not yucking your yum.
I am.
It's like, have you seen anyone in like real lingerie? Because I promise
it's
it is
not
night and day
it's
difference.
Nothing like garments. I would say, that being said, I would probably pick the garments bra over in sexual encounters. As someone who has had garments bra over in sexual encounters, like, it's doable, and it doesn't kill the vibe as much as you think it would. You know,
oh, see, that's God. Why I have to get garments, so I can really speak from experience on questions like this.
Yes, these are the
this
crucial questions that people want
okay,
to know.
Okay, so what we need to do is we need to get you a pair of garments, and you need to not say anything. You need to put your like fanciest bra over on top, and then you need to like throw some rose petals on the bed, light some of those porn shoulder little factory candles, and then just like. Take off your little robe and see your husband's
no, I
reaction.
Think it would
just
be
like the first.
I'm sorry, Lena, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think it'd be better if you didn't tell him and you were like dressed like normal, and then sexy time just happened and he like slowly discovered that you were just
like the horror wash over his face.
Or what you do is you wear the garments and then you get one of those like TikTok leggings that like everyone's like ranting and raving about, and you're like, just my butt look good, look how good my butt looks, and he's like, ooh yeah, and then he like takes it off and he's like, what the fuck do you have underneath these?
All right, challenge accepted. Like, if anyone is listening to this, please reach out to me. Like,
oh my god,
this needs to happen. I need to have
comment below like, if you can get her garments.
Yes,
if you can get garments in her size, because holy shit. And then you want TikTok stuff? Record his reaction.
Yeah, I need to get
like you
some
know how they have people
camera or something. In
yes. Oh my god, you guys, we need to make this happen somehow. We need to make this like an Exmo TikTok trend.
Oh my gosh, it would be amazing.
Oh my god. yeah
too bad my husband has already seen that a billion times.
But if you were just suddenly wearing them out of nowhere, he would
true
be
he would actually probably be traumatized and we'd have to go see a therapist.
We should get like a really tiny pair of garments and adjust them and put them on your cats and just like have them walking
oh
around the
god.
House.
Could you imagine Opie in a pair of garments
with his fur like busting out? He looks like he's wearing garments already because he's so white.
He
but he also looks embarrassed.
He's like, please. Oh my god, I swear to fuck, every time we record it just gets more wild and more wild.
It's the alcohol,
it for real. And I only have like this much, and I'm like,
I know, same.
It's the loud laughter and the light-mindedness. It just,
that's true.
Yes,
really. Yes, gets to you.
Absolutely. Well, my friends, We won't keep you for any longer than we have held you hostage. Hopefully you are here consensually. But we are so grateful that you came and you hung out with us today, Jen. Is there, like, where would you prefer people to reach out to you if they have any questions or anything like that? Do you have, like, a Instagram that you want people to go to?
Yeah, what do you, for sure. So,
what do you use?
So if you have something you want to ask me, the thing that I'm always on top of is email. So it's jennifer@exmocandles.com. But I'm hanging out a lot on Instagram and Facebook, a little bit on Twitter. And then our website is exmocandles.com if you're interested in our candles. But
wonderful. Yes.
But yeah,
yes. That's us. We'll link it below. That way you guys can go order your candles. Please go support the cause. Go add them on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. And make sure you subscribe to More Than Mormon. Hit that like button, notification bell, turn it on. If you want to see more of Jen on More Than Mormon, let us know. We would love to have her back. And do some fun stuff anyway.
And let us know if you're watching in the comments, would you rather temple clothes yes. at yes. every celebration or temple garments brought over for the ladies in every sexual mm-hmm. experience? Because this is a hot topic. I mean, I would love to know people's takes. Chandler's excited.
And if you are a male listener, this could apply to your significant others. This would mean that anytime you had sex, whether it's the same partner or a different one, they are in garments with a bra over. Tell us what you would rather. Anyway, thanks for hanging out with us today, guys. Like, subscribe, share. We appreciate you. We're glad you're here. Go support Exmo Candle
Co. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you. Just sorry, really quickly. Thank you guys so much for having me on. I was really nervous to come on, and you guys were so much fun to hang out with. Like I said, I've listened to every episode, and I'll keep doing that. But it was just wonderful to be on here with you guys. So thank you, and hope to chat again soon.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We love you, Jen. We love all of you listeners and viewers, even the ones who want to hate us. We love you. We appreciate you.
We'll see you next time.
We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Mormon podcast. If you made it this far, then you're definitely worthy to enter the Telestial Kingdom. Wait, is that the good one?